You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Orange Brown Talk podcast. This is Dan Lobby. Here is part two of the Hey Mary Kay edition of our podcast. We're going to start by discussing a little more about Elijah Moore. If you missed part one, head back on your feeds on Spotify or Apple Podcasts to check that out. And just make sure you're subscribed on both of those places to get these as soon as I hit publish. And don't forget, coming up Friday, I'm going to talk deep draft stuff, including wide receiver, with Tim Bielik and Lance Reisland. Here's part two of our Hey MK podcast. Okay, so I'm glad you kind of went there with Elijah Moore, because I was thinking about this. I always say this. I have too much time to think. So sometimes I think about things I want to bring up on the pod, and this is one of the few times I actually remembered it. So Elijah Moore, he came in last year. Everybody was excited. You know, we're in training camp. We're watching in preseason how they're using him. I mean, we're asking him about Deebo Samuel. We're asking him about this new role. And I feel like now, after a year of seeing him, we can kind of reset a little bit. Okay, what does a good Elijah Moore season look like for this team? Now, maybe maybe the top end, he breaks out and has 1,000 yards or whatever, and that's great. But I'm trying to figure out, like, at the end of the year, what does a good season statistically look like for Elijah Moore? And I think what I've landed on is somewhere between 700 and 800 yards and, let's say, 6 touchdowns. Maybe that's a high number. Because, you know, like you said, there's only so many touchdowns and footballs to go around. But let's say 5 or 6 touchdowns and 700 to 800 yards. Does that sound like a pretty good season for Elijah Moore?
I think that would be a great season for Elijah Moore. I think that they had hoped to build on his rookie season with the Jets when he did have 5 touchdown catches, despite the fact he missed the final 4 games of the season with a quad injury. So he's certainly capable of it. And now that you brought up the touchdown catches, I think that's such an important part of this. And I think a lot of it has to do with the revolving door at quarterback last season. But when you add up the touchdown catches of the top 3 receivers that we're going to be seeing in 3 wides this year, Amari Cooper, Elijah Moore, Jerry Jeudy. Elijah Moore had 2 touchdown catches. Jerry Jeudy had 2 touchdown catches in Denver. And then Amari Cooper had 5. But only 2 until Joe Flacco came in the last 5 games of the season for those 2 guys. And then he had 3 more. So he had a total of 5. That's not enough for Amari. Certainly not enough for a Jerry Jeudy. Not enough for Elijah Moore. When you add that all up, that's 9. 9 TD catches amongst those top 3 receivers. So this is where they have to put their focus on scoring the football. I always say that Baker Mayfield was Baker last year because he had Mike Evans catching all those touchdown passes for him. That can make or break your quarterback. And that's what has to happen. They have to scheme these guys open and productive in the red zone and the end zone. And I think there are more touchdowns for David Njoku as well. He had the 6 last year. I always say that he's capable of 8, and this is going to be the year that that happens, Dan, because he's got Deshaun Watson healthy, presumably for the season. So they need more touchdown passes, catches, however you want to say it, but that's what's got to happen. You've got to free up Elijah Moore. You've got to free up Jerry Jeudy in that red zone. You've got to throw the ball to him. You've got to get Amari Cooper in that red zone and end zone more. And if you use all of them wisely, as we know they will, it should be pretty easy to pick your poison down in the scoring zone. So I think there will be plenty more touchdown passes, but that's where some of these guys have to pick it up and shine.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the targets from last year. I should have known this. I guess it makes sense. Elijah Moore was third on the team in targets a year ago. Amari Cooper, predictably number one, and David Njoku, number two. So Elijah Moore was getting targets last year. That'll come down a little bit. But I also wonder, you know, at tight end, we don't know who the number two tight end is going to be, if it's going to be Jordan Akins, if they're going to draft somebody. I would imagine whoever that number two tight end, I mean, Harrison Bryant only got 20 targets last year. Jordan Akins got 23. So 43 targets there between your, you know, the guys who were your number two and three tight ends. I'd have to imagine some of those targets are going to go to Elijah Moore or Jerry Jeudy or Nyheim Hines or someone like that. I think that's how this offense ends up looking really different is you take that second tight end, which I still think is going to be important, but maybe not as important. And now those targets are going to different guys and it's just more opportunities. So I think it's going to be a lot of Amari, a lot of David, and then it's going to be kind of whoever can make themselves really valuable to Deshaun Watson behind those two guys.
Yes. And I think it's going to be very important this off season for a guy like Jerry Jeudy to be out there developing his chemistry with Deshaun Watson as much as possible. Now, we don't know exactly what Deshaun is going to be able to do in the offseason program, in OTAs, in the mini camp. We know he's going to be participating, but will he be participating to the extent that he would be if he were not coming off of a shoulder surgery? I doubt it. I think you have to be patient with him. I think you have to take it a little bit easy. So therefore, you might not be getting all of the reps that you would want to get between Jerry Jeudy and Deshaun Watson when you're trying to make this work. And I do think it matters. Sometimes it doesn't matter as much as it would for other combos. Joe Flacco stepped right in and didn't need a bunch of history with anybody, really. His style and the way that he throws the ball and the way that the ball comes in, it was perfectly easy for everyone to catch his passes. But it was also pretty straightforward. You were not necessarily having to make the site adjustments and run around everywhere and stay relevant and keep in Deshaun's line of vision, whatever. You knew that you could beat your man downfield and that Joe was going to get you the ball and you could go up and get it. This is going to be a little different. You've got to be able to mesh with Deshaun Watson from a field vision, basketball almost, standpoint and be open, be ready, be available. And Jerry Jeudy and Deshaun aren't going to have tons and tons of time to work through that. So it might be a little bit of a work in progress early on in the season. But once they get that down, then I think he's going to get plenty of targets. And I do think it's going to be interesting to see what they do with the tight ends, because I think they do need one more really, really good pass catching tight end. I would be looking for that in the draft. Maybe that's even the place that you go at number 54. So there's definitely room for improvement there.
Okay, this is something you're only going to hear on a Browns only podcast because no other podcasts have time to talk about this. But I want to throw this name at you since we're talking wide receivers. Are we going to be talking about Michael Woods in August?
Why not? I mean, why not? He showed some really, really good things as a rookie before he got hurt. And he was the best rookie wide receiver in camp that season. And he's a big target. He's a hard worker. He's already learned a lot from Amari Cooper. We tend to forget about him. But I think that he is someone to keep your eyes peeled for. And maybe he's someone that you can get a draft pick out of if you find yourself with a surplus and you're ready to kind of, you've moved on a little bit. But he showed plenty of promise. And I know, once again, that they like him. They felt he was a diamond in the rough. He had good hands. He played above his years and his draft status. And I think we are going to be talking about Michael Woods.
Okay, this is sort of a wide receiver question, but this also is more about the new kickoff rules from Terry Richards in Peoria, Arizona. And again, this is another question that we talk a little bit about on the draft pod you're going to hear. But hey, Mary Kay, how do you think the revised kickoff rules will impact draft evaluations for wide receivers with return skills and experience? And I know we talked a little bit about this on our last pod with Ashley, but the more I think about it, the more, and you know, the Justin Hardy signing just sort of drives this home. It does feel like nobody knows how this rule is going to play out. And I just wonder if the Browns are looking at this like, hey, we're not going to get caught in October thinking we didn't do enough to address this. We didn't do enough to address our return abilities, which I think they've done that. We didn't do enough to address our coverage abilities. I don't think they want to get caught regretting not taking this kickoff rule change seriously. And so I think this is an interesting question when it comes down to it in the fifth, sixth, hopefully not the seventh round, when it comes down to it in those later rounds and you're looking at, let's say, two wide receivers or two running backs or two cornerbacks, how much that ability to return or cover or whatever it is in the kickoff game is going to play a factor in whether you pick a guy or not.
I think it will. I definitely think it will. We already saw yesterday that they signed a gunner in Cleveland native Justin Hardy, who played at Glenville and who played for the Jets for the previous three seasons and also played for the Saints. And the gunner is more important now, and kickoff returners are more important now. So those are going to be more premium back end of the draft things to look at for sure. So it's a great point, because you're going to have guys that can do some really cool things for you. There's going to be so many more kickoff returns than there were in the past. This is not an oversight anymore. This is not an afterthought anymore. This is going to be a key part of strategy. And I think that all teams are going to put time and effort into this. And we know that the Browns already have one of the best special team coaches in the NFL, coordinators in the NFL, in Bubba Ventrone. So he's already thinking about this. He's already drawing it up. He's already watching film, trying to figure out what he needs. He knows what he needs. And I'm sure they're going to put their heads together and collaborate on that. I can't wait to talk to him about all of this, which I hope we get to do soon. And if you can find guys that can return these kickoffs for you, for big gains and touchdowns and trick plays and whatever else you can come up with, you're going to go out and find those guys.
I wonder too how this is going to affect depth, because I know the reasoning for it is to make the play safer, and it should do that, right? It should reduce concussions and injuries like that, which is a good thing. But if you're taking plays that were essentially, hey, we're just going to kick the ball off and jog down the field into the end zone, and turning them into live football plays, you are going to increase turned ankles, or maybe there will be a bad knee injury or something like that. You are going to increase, in a weird way, you're going to increase injuries that happen with these things. So I wonder how important depth is going to be as well, how this is going to impact teams' depths, because, you know, you're going to have guys who are ready to go on a game day to cover kicks and play cornerback and do a bunch of different things. I don't know. I think this is going to have like a chain reaction. It could just be a new kickoff rule and it doesn't change a ton, or it could have a real chain reaction to how teams build out that back end of their roster.
And it might take this whole season to figure it out, because like you said, nobody knows exactly what kind of an impact this is going to have on the game yet. I think we all believe that it's going to have a profound impact and that it's going to be a big deal, and that strategists are going to love this and come up with all kinds of interesting things with this. So I think depth in those areas is going to be very important. And I think it will breathe new life into guys that mostly return kickoffs or play gunner. But also, I think you're going to be looking for versatility in some of your players who are second, third team running backs, wide receivers, who can also return these kicks for you. So I do think that that versatility is going to be important, and that players are going to have to, in some cases, make themselves valuable in that way. I mean, that's how you can get on the game day roster, if you can show that you can do this. It could open up the door for you to do other things as well.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Okay, let's get to a few more questions here. This is kind of a more general draft question. Kevin Loveland in Colorado. Hey, Mary Kay, would it be wise to get running back depth in the draft if there is someone in there that intrigues the Browns and fits their scheme?
It certainly can't hurt. We all know by now. I think we can say it, even though it's difficult to say and to acknowledge and to admit. I think we can all say that Nick Chubb is probably not going to be ready for the opener, that he might not even be ready in the first quarter of the season while he continues to rehab his knee. So right now, you've got a running back by committee of Jerome Ford, Pierre Strong, Dante Foreman, Nyheim Hines, although he's more of a returner. And basically, you will be, I think, looking for another running back. But the thing about running back is the fact that it's not hard to find them. You can find a running back, especially against behind this offensive line, that can come in and run for 100 yards for you. So we saw Dearness Johnson do it a number of times. If you put the ball in their hands enough against behind this offensive line, you're going to churn out yards. So I do think that they will keep their eyes open for running backs, but I don't think they're desperate for them. I think that, yeah, they'll look for them. And if one is there, they'll take one, but they're not going to force it either. They're not going to force it. And I don't know if it's a premium enough position to take one with your second or third round pick.
Another question. We sort of touched on the tight end position and what the Browns might do there, but this comes from Casey Encalado in Perrysburg, Ohio. Hey, Mary Kay, are the Browns going to sign or trade for a notable tight end, or will they use the draft to acquire a young tight end?
I have a feeling that maybe they'll end up signing a veteran tight end or trade for a veteran tight end. They'll probably also look for one in the draft, but it almost seems important enough of a position that you want someone who has experience, who can come in and block and do all the things that you're going to need them to do. So I wouldn't be surprised if they end up after the draft, when all is said and done, when they look around a little bit more, and they try to fill that hole with a veteran tight end. I don't know why I think that. It's probably because they've done it in the past. We've seen them go out and grab these other veteran tight ends that in some cases people haven't really heard of that much. But I do think that somehow, some way, they'll probably add another veteran tight end.
I have tight end circled for the draft, not a specific name. It might just be because I make this prediction every year, but I think the Browns will draft a tight end. If I just predict it every year, I'll get it right, you know, like two out of every four. So that'll work. Okay, this is a fun one. We get to play commissioner here. This comes from Mavro and Seabus. Hey, Mary Kay, do you see the NFL expanding anytime in the near future? And what cities do you believe they would look at? I think more importantly, what cities would you like to see the NFL expand to if they did? I don't know. It feels like I know baseball's always talking about expansion. It sounds like the NBA is going to expand in the near future. We don't really hear the NFL talk a lot about expansion. Do you think there's an expansion coming anytime soon, or there could be?
Well, I think under the current CBA, it's not written into the current CBA. So they would have to go back and rewrite and renegotiate the CBA to do it. But what I think is going to happen sooner than later, we see all of this expansion into the global markets. I think that's the next thing we're probably going to see, is some teams in Europe, a team in London and a team maybe in Mexico. I'm not really sure exactly where they would put them, but we see them making this very, very big, strong push globally. And I think that's where the expansion is going to come from. And it will be interesting to see what this NFL looks like 6 years from now, 7 years from now.
I'm trying to think of cities that I'd want them to expand to. An overseas division would be interesting, right? You'd have like, I don't know, London and Frankfurt, and I don't know, you'd pick four teams. I wonder how that would work though with travel, how that would work. Would they be based in the US and travel to London for games? I'd be really curious to see how that looked to actually put a team in London, how they would handle that.
I don't know how they're going to handle it, but the push is real. They're playing 5 international games this year. They're playing up to eight next year. And who knows? We might find out by tomorrow, Dan, that we're going to Brazil. And if they don't go to Brazil, they still have a chance this year to go to London and face the Jaguars. And if they don't go somewhere this year, they're probably going to go somewhere next year. I wouldn't be totally sad if they waited until next year and went to Spain. I think that would be amazing. So we'll see how it goes. But I think that is where the expansion is going to come from. It will be in Europe and overseas, Mexico and or South America. Apparently, I guess Brazil is the third largest international sports market behind Mexico. So it's coming. It's coming. We just don't know exactly what it's going to look like yet.
Okay, I'm gonna do this here, and I'm not fact-checking this. This is just from a BetMGM site. The largest cities without an NFL team. So, and then you tell me if any of these are like, yeah, put a team there. San Antonio, San Diego, Austin, San Jose, Columbus. That would never happen, obviously, because you got Cleveland and Cincinnati. Oklahoma City, El Paso, Portland, Louisville, and Memphis. Do any of those get you excited? I mean, I never got to go to San Diego. I never got to go to that stadium, which I heard was kind of a cool place. So I never got to experience that. But do any of those Austin?
Yeah.
Maybe?
You know, the thing that piqued my interest amongst those was Oklahoma City.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a growing city. I think it's an untapped market and state for the NFL. And out of all of those, that's the one that piques my interest the most, because you've got California teams, you've got Texas teams, right? You know, you've got, of course, Ohio teams. That's one where I think it's an untapped area that they probably should try to mine.
And, you know, Oklahoma is like a football state. We know that. So, yeah, and it feels like they really love the Thunder there. So it seems like they're able to support a professional team. Okay, there we go. We're putting teams in NFL cities here, or non-NFL cities, putting them overseas, putting them all over the place. That's what we do here on the Orange and Brown Talk podcast. Those questions came from our Football Insider subscribers, cleveland.com/Browns, the blue banner at the top of the page. To get involved with that, just click on that banner to get all the info. Find us on Instagram, search Orange and Brown Talk. On YouTube, search Cleveland Browns on cleveland.com. And of course, subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Mary Kay, I'll talk to you later.
Sounds great.